You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 606, and we are here with a special guest, a band that was around a while ago, and they disappeared, and everyone said, where'd that band go? And now they're back, and they've got a new album, and I say it's their strongest material to date. We are here with, I don't know if long running is the right word, we are here with the band Long Existing Cigar. We are here with Rami and John. Fellas, thanks for coming on the Punk News Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So the first question everyone has is, I know you guys reunited a couple of times in like 2016 and 2015. You played a couple of shows and you guys were on some compilations, but everyone wants to know why. Well, actually, the first question is, this is going to be your first album in 23 years or something. Are you scared? Are you nervous? Or are you excited to reinvent yourself yet again?
My first thought is I'm not scared or nervous because we don't really have anything to lose. What we made the second record is just cut from the same cloth of the speed is relative energy and speed, and it's very us. And if anything's different, it's just we dug in deeper, so it's more satisfying. What do you think, Rami?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's, we talked about it and specifically said, like, we need to pick up where we left off, which is kind of just true to the essence of who we are as a band, especially given that we've been involved in different projects of different styles of music. So it's the other elements of our musicianship have been satisfied elsewhere. So coming back to Cigar and keeping it authentic felt very natural.
And actually, along those lines, why a new Cigar album now, as opposed to say 5 years ago or 5 years going forward? Was it just a happenstance, or did you guys specifically want to come back now?
Well, we actually would have done this a little bit sooner, but COVID did throw everything off. We had to cancel some tours, but luckily timing landed us with Fat Records. Like, all the timing just worked out perfectly. So it feels like now is better time than ever. I don't know why. It seems like everything kind of repeats every 20 years in pop culture, you know? Like, everyone now is dressed the way... well, that's not even true, actually. How long ago did we graduate high school? It looks like everyone's kind of like... I went to a skate shop the other day, and everybody had really baggy pants that, like, cover their shoes. And that's exactly how we wore our clothes in like 91, late high school years, graduating high school year to be exact. And it seems like 20 years ago was Cigar's moment, and we hadn't done a lot since then, and it just felt like now is the time. Like, we're kind of there anyway. We're listening to the old records from 20 years ago that we loved, and it just felt right. We never really broke up, though. We just found it harder and harder to pull off shows as Fletcher warned us years ago when we put out Speed is Relative. He saw that we already had a tendency to not go on the road too long and kind of have reasons why we couldn't take longer stretches of tours. And he kind of like chewed us out, as he does. He's chewed us out a lot. And he said, you guys can sit around and eat Ben and Jerry's and rent Blockbuster videos when you're 40, which he was actually wrong about that, because there aren't any Blockbuster stores anymore. but he's like, do that shit when you're fucking old and 40. And 40 was like, I don't know what, 9 years ago or something. But now that we're pushing 50, we figure, why not make that record that's mostly 230 BPMs and causes hyperventilation to play? What were we talking about?
John referenced Fletcher. The listeners probably know, but maybe they don't know. I believe Fletcher of Pennywise was instrumental in you guys kind of putting together your first record, and he produced your first record, didn't he? Speed is Relative, which is the band's first record.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
so that was fun.
So what's Fletcher like as a person?
Oh, he's a big sweetheart. Rami, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time with Fletcher. He's in some ways, in many ways, he's exactly what you would think. And then in other ways, he's like super just, I don't know. It's like, he's such a very passionate, heartfelt guy. Like, he really looks out for his people, and he's really such a generous and giving dude. But I mean, along the way, he'll test you and flick you some shit, but he's
all the rumors are true for sure though. All the crazy ass stories. We have our own share of stories being in a studio with him for a week or so. He's everything they say he is.
Well, I know way back in the day, he and Crazy Tom Davis of DFL were in a car, and for no reason whatsoever, Fletcher just started ramming his car into other cars like late at night. Park cars, that is, not people driving cars, park cars. You alluded to some stories in the studio. What Fletcher studio stories do you have?
Well, the major one was when I got locked in a bathroom, and
it was in stall number two where we were tracking Speed is Relative, and they were doing all that stuff.
His old recording studio. So I was in the restroom, and unbeknownst to me, he'd tied a 50-foot instrument cable around the doorknob, and then around into the next room, around the kitchen faucet. And so I couldn't open the door at all. And he was gonna, you take it.
There was some other shit from our perspective, because we were just like taking a break, and I was sitting there playing some old video game in the little lounge in the studio, and then Fletcher's wrapping the handle up, and he looks over at me and he's shushing me. And I'm kind of looking over at Jason, the former bass player. And we're kind of like, uh-oh. And then Fletcher goes, "You're about to witness the making of a man." And we're kind of like, "What the fuck's happening?" And he rushes out of the room. And I go over to the door and I'm like, "Hey, Rami, I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to try and get you out of here." And Rami's like, "What the fuck's going on?" I'm like, "Hang on a second." And Fletcher comes back. He's all, "Get away from the door." And he has this massive butcher knife. And just swings it, and it kind of goes whoosh. I'm like, "Whoa, what the fuck?" And I run around him up on the couch against the wall, and we all scooch across the room because he's got this big butcher knife and a fire extinguisher, and he's going, "Rami, we're about to make you a man," and points at us with the knife. "You're about to witness the making of a man. Get away from the door, Rami." And he's holding the knife up. He's going to punch a hole with the knife. This is what we're told, because he didn't actually get to pull it off that night because Rami intervened, but we're getting there. He's about to stab a hole in the wall and fill the room with fire extinguisher because it makes everything go white and suffocates the victim inside momentarily just for laughs. And then he cuts them loose and they come out panicking all white while everyone laughs at him. That's what's supposed to happen. But Rami at some point, we hear him like a blood curdling scream. He's like, "Let me out of here." And the bass player and I had never quite heard that tone in his voice. I'm like, "Whoa, dude, you better let him out. He's freaking out." And Fletcher's like, "Hang on, Rami." And the door is getting smacked from the inside. And he's like, "Hang on, just hold still, back away from the door." And then all of a sudden, before Fletcher can stab a hole in the wall, a broom handle comes out of the bathroom wall next to the door. And it's Rami trying to stab his way out with a broom handle. And so, boom, boom, right by Fletcher's face. He's like, "Whoa, whoa, hang on," boom, over and over. He's like, "Stop, Rami, stop, stop." And so he's like, "I'm going to cut it loose. Just stop." And so Rami stops for a second, and he cuts it loose. And then Rami busts the door open and throws a phone, and we all duck, and it shatters above us. And his face is all red, and he looks so enraged that we're like, "Let's go outside." And he and Fletcher stayed in there. And I don't know what they talked about. They broke down. And then ever since then, they're super tight. The rest of us walk wider on them, but Rami's, he's in there now. He was all, "Dude, that was so fucking punk, Rami. Oh my God." He was impressed.
Yeah, it was definitely scarring.
It did kind of change you.
Well, speaking of scarring, I know you guys were on Theologian in 99. Just out of curiosity, did you ever run into the Dwarves? Because they had a record on Theologian in 97 and 98.
Did we? I don't know.
I don't think we did.
I remember those dudes. I just don't think we knew them. We were around the Deviants a lot when they were putting their record out. They were kind of like a buddy band at the time, you know?
Yeah, we played a bunch of shows with them in the South Bay where they were from.
And they're doing stuff again, too.
When did you guys make the switch from Oregon down to San Diego? Was that in the 90s or later on? Or 99.
Yeah, it was in the 90s.
Yeah. So I guess the listeners probably know that the band's originally from Eugene. What was the punk scene like in late 90s Eugene, Oregon? Like, what bands were playing there? What were the clubs? Who would you see around? Was it crazy? Was it safe? Was it dangerous? Was it funny? What was the punk scene like then?
A little bit of all that, right? I mean, I saw some scary shows. I remember seeing Pennywise up there. Did you see that, Rami?
Yeah, I saw them.
We were both at that show, but we didn't know each other.
It was at the Wow Hall. It's kind of like a local venue. That's where a lot of the bands would come through, bands of a certain size in that era. But yeah, and then, well, there's like Icky's Tea House. You saw Propagandi there back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Jawbreaker.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in the Eugene scene. I had a screaming fast punk band in NorCal that I started in high school. And when we graduated, we put out an EP, and I really played that Gilman scene a lot, you know, like we saw Green Day so many times, we started to add it up because it just became funny that we'd seen them. We were like Green Day groupies, but we were like screaming punk rock, just angst ridden punk rock. But we just thought it was so fun to see Green Day because they would just like blow the doors off of Gilman every time, or wherever you could catch them. They just would hit the room with so much energy. They were so great. This was like when they had the first two records, you know. But then I broke up my band. It was called Circus Tents because we had the luxury of opening up for Lagwagon and NOFX. And it was the duh tour for Lagwagon. And it was Longest Line for NOFX. And El Jefe was brand new. And we were the opener. And I remember Derek, the first drummer of Lagwagon. He's such a badass. And they sound check with that song Noble End from Duh. It's just blazing fast, and he was doing all double snare hits like but super fast with a single pedal. I'm like, oh my god, that guy is fucking amazing. And I went up and talked to him. I was like, you must love RKL. And he's like, actually, this is Bomber's drums. And I was like, oh my god. I felt really starstruck that he was sitting on the RKL drums. This was like 1990, whatever year Duh came out, that's what year it was. So I went home and sold my double pedal, and I ultimately broke up my band. I love that band. It was just like my first sweetheart, you know, and like I had this vision of playing faster and having more harmonies and trying to do more technical shit. So I moved to Oregon. I did the old school thing since we didn't all have the internet rolling, you know. This was 94. I moved up there and I put up flyers everywhere with my number that you could tear off. It was like drummer, 5 years experience. Fast shit, RKL, but mixed with the Police or some shit like that. And then I found Jason first, our OG bass player. And then we kept playing. I'm just like, ended up telling the history story too fast. Am I just like grabbing the wheel too much here?
I'm really glad you are talking about this because there is such a break in the cigar, or maybe break is not the right word, because there's a gap between the two albums, you guys probably haven't been codified and discussed as much as you are. So I think it's pretty cool you guys are telling the origin story, and then you'll talk about how you got formed. And then we'll talk about the new record, which is out on September 9th. Bat Records, and we'll talk about that too. So please continue the origin story.
I'm trying to give you the fast version. Yeah, because we we are, as a band, we are from Eugene, but my roots were in NorCal, you know. And then I went up to Eugene. I found Jason. It was we were trying to play more Police like shit. Just it was the only thing he and I really had in common. But he was so good, and I had written a couple ideas on guitar that were fast. I was like, have you ever played shit like this? And I played him a couple of riffs, and he's like, oh, I could get my head around that. He'd never done it. And so he made up some bass lines. And then I grabbed another guitarist, Brendan Beckowies. He went on to play in like MDC, and he had a band back then called the Readymen. Awesome. He's got like old school chops, like kind of bluesy old school punk rock chops. Awesome dude. But then I met Rami in a movie theater because I was determined to find a singer. And he walked by with a Good Riddance shirt with his girlfriend at the time. And I tore his ticket and I was like, oh yeah, it's last theater down on your left. You want to sing for a band? And he's like, what? And the girlfriend's looking at him and looking at me like, and Rami is like, I don't really sing. I'm like, well, you play music? I play guitar. We can play music then. You want to jam? He's like, can we watch the movie first? And I was like, yeah, well, call me after the movie. But he literally came over that night after the movie. And then we rocked out on like, I just had like a guitar case set up as a bass drum. And I put my pedal against that and a snare with like a blanket over it or something. And then that went really well. And then Rami came back. Rami went and wrote Long Run from Speed is Relative and from our early demos and brought that back just to have material. Anyway, then we, then Rami was like, remember we were singing along to songs and I was like, dude, you can fucking sing. Just sing for the band. He's like, I try, I guess. We already had two guitarists. We had Jeff Jones from my old band Circus Tents and Brendan and all up there in Eugene. But once Rami got involved, it really took shape and we got a momentum. And now we got this like lead singer guy writing lyrics constantly and riffs and hooks. And so he was like, all of a sudden we had a lot of work to do. And then it just took shape. And then we got name. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. We'll talk about the name.
I was like, let's name it after a racehorse. I was thinking of like Man at Arms and all those weird kind of names you hear of racehorses. And then so Rami watched the horse races, and that day that he watched it, Cigar was the winner. So we're just named after a racehorse.
Yeah, it was just on the news at the time. It was the most winning racehorse in the 90s. It had the set records and everything. So it was just kind of circumstantial, and it just, at no point were any of us like, oh, that's a great name. It was just more along the lines of following a theme. And so we're like, okay, this works.
And I don't feel like I was sold on it. And I know Brendan was like, oh, fuck no, absolutely not. And Brendan almost left because of the name or something. But then you made Romy with like some early graphics programs, made some pretty rad looking crest that said Cigar on it. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So then all of a sudden it stuck. Do you remember that yellow and black crest? You made that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I made
that. That was good.
But yeah, the name has nothing to do with tobacco or anything.
Or Monica Lewinsky or any bullshit like that.
Yeah.
Robin, I've heard that theory.
What was it like when you walk into the movie theater and some guy's like, hey, do you want to sing in a band? And like, were you creeped out or were you like, yeah, that's totally rad? Like, what was going through your mind?
No, I wasn't creeped out, but I just, my first reaction was like, oh, I'm not a singer. I play guitar. I started on bass and then I was playing bass like a guitar. So I just switched to guitar because I was writing songs and then stuck with guitar and just played with a drum machine and just never, I jammed out with a few people here and there, but nothing ever clicked, never was in a band or anything. And then I was wearing that Good Riddance shirt and John asked if I want to be a singer. And I said, oh, I'm not really a singer, but I play guitar. And he said, oh, we already have two guitar players. We're looking for a singer. And then I said, oh, yeah, I play bass. He said, well, we already have a bass player. So that was when we just ended up jamming out. And then when he had that setup with the guitar case leaning up against the wall and then the snare drum, and he was doing fills on the wall. And it was like, I just remember thinking, I actually just told a story recently. I just said that once I heard that, I was like, I got to play music with this guy. I just don't know how. And so then that was part of why I was like, maybe I should try singing, because that would be a way I could play music with this guy. But I was totally, I'd never sang in a band or anything like that. But we were driving on a road trip. And then we were harmonizing to songs and like singing different parts, Bad Religion, Lagwagon, NOFX, and Green Day and all that. And we were singing the multi-part harmonies. And that's when John stopped the music and he's like, you can sing. You should totally try singing. But I was pretty intimidated. So I wanted to sing something I was familiar with. And that's when I went back home and I wrote the song Long Run, just so I could have something. It just felt safer just because it was like, came from me and I go, okay, I know where this is headed. I know what the intent of this song is. And then I showed it to John first and he liked it. We brought one of the old guitar players over and he liked it. And then we brought it finally to the whole band and everyone liked it. So they, at that point, they're like, you're the singer of the band. And so then, but it was, I had to figure out like what that meant because I'd never done it before. So it was just a lot of learning by doing.
Very cool. I got one last old school question that we'll start talking about the new album. John mentioned the Police. The Police are perhaps an understated influence in punk rock because Roger Meerett of Agnostic Front, huge Police fan. Beastie Boys were big fans of the Police. And even members of Hawkwind collaborated with members of the Police, Sting. So I guess two questions. First question is, why is the Police so, I guess, influential on punk rock and don't talk about? But also, how can Sting write three amazing albums in a row and then go solo and just not write a single good song ever in 40 years? How do you do that? How do you write like three albums of kick-ass songs and you're like, I'm done. I'm just going to write bullshit for the rest of my career. Like, how do you do that?
This still happens sometimes. You know, people start getting the idea that they're the ones doing it all and they're not realizing that the chemistry and the components in place that are bringing their songs to life have so much to do with the sound of the band. Like, I don't want to hear the Police without Stuart Copeland and Andy Summers. It's just, it's Sting. And all of a sudden there's harmonicas and like jazz chops and all this shit that I don't relate to. And the grit is gone. He can go make it perfect the way he wants it. And it's not that gritty anymore. It's just, it just got so boring. I really don't know Sting records at all. I don't know if I've listened. There's a couple of jams every now and then, maybe karaoke. I might do, what's that one about the fortress?
There's Fortress in Your Heart, and also where he's flying across the ocean on like a king's chair, a king's throne. I would do anything for whatever. Anyways,
yeah.
Well said. I think there's a parallel you could draw there with a lot of legacy punk bands that only have one or two members left who say that. Well, I'll just say it's Black Flag, Greg Ginn. Greg Ginn thinks he's everything, and the proof is in the pudding. Greg Ginn without the other members of Black Flag is much weaker than classic Black Flag. But listen, we're not here to talk trash, although we will talk trash a little bit more. We are here to talk about the new Cigar album. The new Cigar album is out September 9. It is called The Visitor. And actually, I think it's the band's best material so far. And I love the cover. Why don't you guys talk a little bit about the concept of The Visitor? Because we don't have a track called The Visitor. So is that like an overarching theme to the record? Are we talking sci-fi? Are we talking interpersonal relationships? What do we mean when we talk about The Visitor?
We can go a couple different ways with it. Does anything come to mind for you, Rami?
Well, I think one of the things that we initially talked about was that we were sort of, I guess, overlooked in some way, or it sort of felt that way. And so it felt like we were visitors to the punk scene, where like we would come in and play a show and then people would kind of see us at the show and then sort of forget about us. And we would just, so it felt like when we were coming back with a new album that we were coming back to visit the punk scene, so to speak.
Yeah, like we were strangers now. We've been gone a long time too. It's all changed. And we're really just playing the same kind of, we're playing from the same inspiration that started the band to begin with, you know? I mean, we really grew up on 80s punk rock, you know, like primarily, almost entirely. And then after being so immersed in it and through the formative years in high school and all that, and then discovering the, like the early 90s take on this, we didn't call it skate punk then. If anything, we referred to like a certain type of punk as skate rock, like anything Caballero was doing with like the Faction or whatever. Even the old Suicidal, I thought of as skate rock. First record, second record even. But the fuck are we talking about? You guys, I'm still on tour, Rami, since I saw you last. We went on tour on June 17th. Is it September 1st? I'm still on tour right now. I'm in a hotel. I don't even know. It took me a minute to remember what city I was in. I'm in Cleveland right now. Where are you guys?
I'm in Philadelphia. And
I'm by Toronto in Canada.
There the other night. Just play there.
Hey.
Anyway. John, are you on tour with the Shins?
Yeah, they're all in my hotel room playing a GTA 5 right now. So I'm up in the bass player's room.
What's it like touring with the Shins compared to playing with Cigar? You know, Shins are more in, I guess, the indie rock scene or the more mainstream field, while Cigar is kind of in the more punk scene. What's it? I mean, is there any difference? Is there a big difference?
It's a pretty major difference, and that is tour buses and drum techs and versus doing everything yourself, which is what we do in Cigar. We had a 3-week tour. We're all in that little van, and I love it. It's like, I've always loved that. You're road tripping with your buddies, different show every night. You're lugging all your shit in there, set up and go. We have one dude that is a good enough friend to put up with us and come out and tour. And that's our buddy, Rudy from South Africa. He flies up from Johannesburg to tour with us. He's done it twice now in Europe, and he's the best. He brings the best energy, and we love it. And then out here on the Shins, it's just a completely different experience. It's like
you don't have to set up your own drums.
Right. That's kind of the biggest part. You just ride the crew. Yeah, there's a big crew in one bus, and then we're in another bus, and there's a big semi with gear, and someone's handling everything, and a tour manager. I think that Cigar is about to have tour managers and probably a good tech guy out there watching this podcast. It's going to offer us his services or her services. DMs.
I've got a couple last questions for you. I think Em might have some questions, but I guess, John, just briefly, have you ever found yourself power tripping? You've got a bus, you've got the drum tech, you walk out there, the audience is sold out and clapping. Have you ever found yourself power tripping?
I don't know what Rami would say about me, but I don't think so. No, because I feel really grateful to be doing music. And the thing is, I'm a huge Shins fan. I joined 6 years ago, but 20 years ago when we were touring on Speed is Relative, I would put the Shins on to like cleanse the palate between all these punk shows, you know? And Jason Torbert, our old bassist, he was really into it too. So, it's interesting to land in the band and as a fan. So you get to play with a lot of energy and passion with that. And everyone's really grateful to be here. It's a really nice crew of people. Everyone's awesome. And they're all really supportive of Cigar. It's actually James Mercer from the Shins that Rami and I showed him a bunch of stuff in Portland at his studio. And he was like, what the fuck, you guys? You got people out there that want to hear this shit. You're just sitting around. Make that fucking record. What are you doing? And we were kind of like, we didn't even know what to say. This was like 5 or 6 years ago. And we're like, well, yeah. And Rami's been ready the whole time. It's been hard. Jason has two kids. And he's been there since the beginning. So it's like a family affair the whole time. And at some point, we just had to have a talk. Like, there's a lot Cigar could be doing, and I don't think you can do it because it's getting really hectic, and we want to go to Europe. We want to make this record. And he's, you know, he has an adult life like most people pushing 50 have. We just finally agreed. You know, he even said it himself. Like, why don't you guys do it without me, because I don't want to stop you from doing it. And then he and our new guy, Hishke, have a lot of respect for each other. So I told him we'd probably get Hishke, even though I don't even think I'd asked Hishke yet. I was just kind of like, I hope he can do it, because they both play with their fingers. They're both like nerdy, noodly, proggy weirdos that don't listen to like this kind of punk. Like, they respect some old 70s and early 80s shit, but that's about it, you know? But now we got Hishke all intertwined in it, and he's having a blast. It's like, it's like he was made for this stuff. It was funny because he was playing the craziest shit on their record. And then we go into like a straight beat, just like bing, bang, bang, bing, bang, bang. And we were like, you just kind of like, that's where we need you to just go like, do, 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 do. You know, like sometimes just do that. And he's like, what? Just like that? He was kind of like annoyed. But then once he got it, he's like, oh. It's like everybody's first step playing punk rock, but he's in there just like, all this shit. And then we go into the straight beat, and he's kind of like, he was trying to do too much. He was trying to like hit every hit my bass drum was doing. And but yeah, then he sank right into the pocket, and then it just like, it was perfect. And he did it with like no warning, no warm up time. And Rami and I sitting over him, just like, try this, try that, do that. Oh, this part, you have to do that. It's just like sitting there getting requests from all directions because we'd already been working on these songs a while. Anyway, Hishki.
Rami, what's maybe a lyric or a feeling or a song that you would really like the listener to focus on the new album?
Oh, man. I'm having trouble picking one.
Why don't you explain Seven Plies?
Well, so Legacy of the Seven Plies comes from that one. It's called Seven Plies because the seven plies of hard rock maple that make up a skateboard. And we come from the generation where if you rode a skateboard, you listened to punk rock. It was just, you didn't separate them in that era. I started listening to punk and skateboarding in 1985. And it was such a huge part of like the culture. And so that it was basically, the song is an homage to that heritage and that kind of foundational, you just set the tone for the basically the entire band. And so there's all these graphics that were so influential and really iconic. And so the lyrics are just descriptions of each of those old skateboards. And so it's just honoring like where we came from and that old legacy.
That's pretty cool. That's a really interesting concept. I like how you guys have taken a mechanical procedure and kind of give it a sort of spiritual or metaphysical concept. That's cool. Last question for me, then I'm going to ask you a question or a couple questions. Today, September 1, on Instagram, Fat Mike, in the comment section of Instagram, said that NoFX was breaking up after next year. Do you guys have any inside dirt? Is NoFX breaking up next year? Because you're on Fat Records.
The album's not out yet, Rami, so don't fuck this up.
Fat Mike spent the night at my house for a couple nights a little bit ago, and we talked about some stuff like that, but it's not my place to say anything.
An ominous answer, Em. It wasn't a denial, I'll point out, but it wasn't a confirmation either. Em, hit him with some cues.
Very diplomatic. How do you feel that your songwriting has evolved from like taking the break? Do you think that helped? And how has it changed on the new album?
I think it definitely helped. Not the break per se, but just being involved in different types of music and focusing more on the art of songwriting. I know John had some experiences with some producers in the UK and learned a lot there. And I learned a lot. I delved into electronic music for a little while, just keeping the musical growth happening. And then also I ended up kind of hitting the reset button, and I took guitar lessons with Dave Nassy, who used to play in No Use for a Name, and really studied music theory and started paying more attention to some of the depth. Not that it really took over the songwriting. It was more just like a supplemental tool to add to the songwriting. And then in terms of the lyrics, that has always been the hardest part, but it's also, it forces me as the primary lyric writer to really focus and push myself, even despite it being difficult. And then part of that in the songwriting process, John and I started to actually write lyrics together, which we never had done before. On the first album, everything I sang, I wrote by myself in my own place. And then John wrote his own parts and sang. So we each wrote separately. On the new album, there's songs where it was very collaborative. And then in fact, like we used to actually, those are John's lyrics in the chorus. And then we started combining efforts. So we took a different approach to songwriting and for this second album. And it was an interesting challenge, but it ended up kind of pushing both of us in a direction of growth.
That's definitely true, but he also just writes so much. Like, I mean, really, Rami writes all those lyrics. Those are a couple instances where I collaborated on the lyrics, but he just like grinds away. He'll throw so much shit at you, it's crazy. You have to like This dude's got so, yeah, he's very prolific. He's just like constantly creating. Like, we are not running out of material anytime soon. So now it's nice that we're with Fat now, because we can start getting some shit done. We have a lot more to do. I feel like we're just getting started. It's weird to get just feel like you're getting started as we're pushing 50, which is hilarious. I turned 49 in like 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks. And then when we first started doing this again, I thought, well, shit, I've been playing drums all this time. I must be better than I was when we did Speed is Relative. But then I forgot about when you play live, the stamina involved in playing, you know, like 220 BPMs or whatever the whole time. And so, yeah, I've been getting my ass kicked into shape, and it feels great. It feels kind of like a midlife crisis, and like getting back into going fast again. And just like, it's cool. It's getting in touch again with what you were passionate about as a kid, but like bring it to life again later in life. And then it kind of erases all the worries about getting older, or at least most of them.
Well said. Do you have any more questions, or should I play track?
Play the track.
Okay. Well, listen, John had a great way to summarize the new Cigar album, their first after 23 years. If you are a Cigar fan, you will dig this album. It's called The Visitor. It's out September 9 via Fat Records. And let's play it, now that we know the background behind this track. And I, like I said, I really dig the metaphysical or the high concept idea. This is Legacy of the Seven Plies. And we'll be right back.
The sun, skulls in the sink and the sinner with
And we are back, and that was the new track by Cigar. Let's hit the news. Fellas, are you sticking around for the news today?
If my computer doesn't die.
Fantastic. Sure.
2%.
Oh, no.
If I disappear, I love you guys. Just saying goodbye now.
All right. Well, we'll get through as much news as we can. So first on our news docket this week is, okay, Off have released a new music video. The music video is for the song Kill to Be Heard. Free LSD out via Fat Opossum Records. Of course, the big thing with Off now is there was like an 8-year break between record 3 and 4. The rhythm section has changed, and Off was quite vocal that they wanted to do something new that they hadn't really done in the first 3 records. They've released a couple of singles before this one, 2 which are basically just noise tracks. And this track, this new track, Kill to Be Heard, is kind of more, I guess I would say, standard Off, if you will. And the commenters really seem to like it. I got to say, I love Off. I think Off is one of the best bands around ever. And I think them doing something new and unique and challenging is the right move for LP number 4. I think if they did LP number 4, it would be good, but people are like, oh, it's Off number 4. I think that doing something daring with a funny video is cool. And I got to say, I actually think this track was pretty darn good. I expressed some concern with just the noise tracks from the other tracks, because I'm like, well, maybe it'll just be a bunch of weird tracks that don't really fit together. But I think this track kind of confirms that we're going to get kind of one of these spiraling masterpieces like Rudimentary Penai's Cacophony, like Ariel Pink's Pom Pom, like Exile Main Street, just one of these spiraling records that has all these concepts woven together into one big fabric, if you will. So I think this is a great sign. I think it's going to be a great album. I'm really excited about the new Off record now. And more, I don't remember if you shared my trepidation or not. What do you think of this track, and what's your forecast for Off LP number 4?
I thought it was going to be really cool because I like the noise tracks and how they fit in, because they're working on the movie too. So the way that the noise tracks are paced in the album, it seems like that's how it's going to be. It's going to be like you're listening to a movie, but not like a soundtrack, if that makes sense. And the videos are connected too. So they released a video for War Above Los Angeles a couple weeks ago. And that they're introduced like these like black-eyed cult member kind of evil dudes, and the people who listen to Free LSD who have like white eyes, and they're fighting against the evildoers and all this kind of stuff. So some of those characters are held over into this video, and the story is continued. So like there's a doctor in the first video, he's in this video, and there's lots of action, and there's more blood in this and gore kind of, and it keeps you like very like interested. There's lots of, I love the video. The video is great, and it ends on such a cliffhanger. So basically like there's a cop, and he has his hand that's like been shot off, and he shoots, and then the
spoiler alert.
Black. Oh shit! Right, go watch the video before. And then, I mean, maybe that's, yeah. Maybe it's not. You never know. There could be something else. There's a whole. You never know. So it's so good. I'm really excited. I love this song, and the album's going to be great. What did you guys think of the new Off track?
Well, I haven't even heard it yet, but I'm going to go check it out.
No.
I've been meaning to hear the first one, the first album. One of these days I'll check it out.
Would recommend. Okay, well, very, very good.
Definitely. Here's a not nearly as fun story. Big shakeup in the world of Neurosis. I'm just going to summarize here. So kind of out of the blue, Scott Kelly, who was an original founding member of Neurosis, along with Dave Ed, and who's the other original member of Neurosis? Dave Ed, I can't remember. Anyway, Dave Ed and Scott Kelly and another guy are original member of Neurosis. Scott's been in the band ever since they were a punk band. Seemingly out of the blue, he stated that he has been emotionally, financially, verbally, and physically abusing his wife and younger children. And even worse, if that wasn't bad enough, he's been here and there, he's been keeping him home and from school to kind of disguise his activities. The band, not immediately, but pretty shortly thereafter, released a statement that said, we knew he had problems, but we didn't know they were physical in nature, and we didn't know they were this bad. We actually kicked him out of the band in 2019 after we reached out to him and tried to have him, you know, kind of tell us what was going on and maybe work on the issues that he was having. And so we're completely severing from him, and he's been out of the band since 2019. They also said that even though they support people's mental health struggle and getting better, you know, if you have mental health problems, addressing that, they're saying Scott Kelly's statement isn't exactly genuine. It's really another attempt to manipulate, I guess, the story and paint himself as a victim when really he's being a bad guy here and has been all around uncool. And then the Rosa said, we're not going to talk about music for a while. We'll let you know what's happening music wise in a little while. So the question of here, I guess, is it's not really a he said situation, because Scott Kelly admits to being honestly a really bad guy. It's really bad to physically abuse someone, and you're really, really bad if you have to keep them home to hide that fact. So that's all pretty bad, and he cops to it. So that's pretty much case closed, if you will. But the question is, Neurosis has a massive discography. I've got a lot of Neurosis records, and I dig especially like the first half of Neurosis, a groundbreaking, trailblazing band, also considered one of the seminal 924 Gilman bands with Crim Shrine, Operation Ivy, and Green Day. So, Em Moore, I don't know if you have a question or not. We just lost John, his battery ran out. But Em, I don't know if you have an answer or not. What do we do when we have an artist that we love and it turns out some of the people in the band aren't just kind of dicks? I mean, there's lots of bands where the people are dicks, and you know, not a huge deal, you know what I mean? But what do you do right when the people in the band are like kind of monsters, you know what I mean? What do you do with that? Do you just listen to the music and ignore it? Do you say, well, this was back then, this is now? Do you burn? I know you had this issue with Marilyn Manson, right?
I did, yes.
So what do you do?
Yeah. So, well, the thing with like the Marilyn Manson thing, I have not listened to a lot of Neurosis, so I don't know if this is true here, but when the allegations about Marilyn Manson came out, and obviously they're still coming out, and there's a lot of shit that way. But anyway, you listen to the music and you realize, oh my God, he's bragging about something he's done. This is real. Like, this isn't like, oh, I'm just a weirdo who's doing some cool stuff. This is like actually scary, because he's documenting this stuff. So in that, I couldn't continue listening to it at all, which I ended up like, I had a shirt, I had the book. Again, if you want to talk about holy shit, yeah, the book admits to pretty much everything. And everyone's just like, oh, he's just this is all what he's created. It's not necessarily true or real, but it was. So in that case, like, I gave the book away. I burned the shirt, and I destroyed the CDs, and I made art out of it, because it's like, there's no use. I've already paid for it. No one's gonna get any use out of like old scratch CDs. So like in that case, it was a pretty extreme reaction, because I felt like it had to be, because there's no way to, again, enjoy that without feeling really, really gross about it. So that was my take on it. With this, like, this is just a really, really, really awful, awful situation. And I hope that his wife and children are getting the help that they need and the support that they need. And hopefully they're out of that situation and everything. So again, I'm not sure what the lyrical content of Neurosis is, but I would give it some time and some space to really kind of think about it and what it means. And if you were to listen to them, maybe don't give them money.
Fair enough. Rami, you know, Eric Clapton's been accused of some things. Pete Townsend of the Who's been accused of some things, some real bad things. Even Jimmy Page has had some things thrown at him. What do we do when some of our favorite artists get accused of some pretty bad things? What do we do? Is the art separate than the artist is the question, you know?
That's a tough question, but a necessary question. I think that if you're holding true to your values, then I think it's somewhat of an easy choice. I think M nailed it in the sense of there's a certain amount of support that you simply just withhold just to make it clear what your stance is.
Well said. We just got a couple of last quick stories here. This is another fun story. The Slackers have released a new video for a song called Your Second Best. It's off their last album, which is out on not their final album, their most recent album, which is out via Pirates Press. It's called Your Second Best. It's got a little animated video, which has all the Slackers getting killed in the video, who eventually all play together in heaven as the Slackers. I got to say, the Slackers are one of these bands. They don't really deviate from what they do, but everything they do is really, really good. I think the video is actually I think the video is kind of a low-key video, but I enjoyed it way more than I do most low-key videos. I thought the tune is real good. I think the video is real good, and I think the Slackers are a very consistent band, and it's kind of cool that they're keeping their vision of, I guess, neo-ska alive, and I think you're doing a great job. And more, do you like the video? Do you like the song?
Yeah, I liked the video. I thought it was just like, it was fun and kind of funny. Like one of the guys gets eaten by a shark and it's great. He's just like walking and it just like pops up. So I liked the animation and I liked how they just made it kind of fun. And you want to know what's going to happen to the next guy kind of thing. When the first one walks out and he just like falls, you're like, oh, is that what they're all going to do? And they're all going to like be ghosts and all this kind of stuff. Because his ghost kind of like rises up, but then each one's different. There's a different setting, so I got a kick out of that. I thought it was good. The song, yeah, like it's solid. It's a Slacker song. You know, it's a Slacker song. That's not necessarily a bad thing. So I did like it. I completely forgot they released an album this year, so I need to go back and listen to it. So it was good that they released the video to kind of remind everyone. So yeah, Rami, what did you think?
I haven't heard that one yet.
All right, well, do you like the Slackers?
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, let's do one story. Billy Idol, he's got another EP coming out. The EP is called The Cage, and it's going to be out September 23 via Dark Horse. His last EP was on Dark Horse as well. The vinyl version of this record literally sold out in like 20 minutes because I wanted to get one and I couldn't. I suspect that the recording session is from the same recording session as the Roadside EP because I think it seems kind of weird just to record two EPs. Like I bet he recorded them all at once and then they just kind of split them up, which honestly, I think it's probably a good idea because, like, for whatever reason, like, if you have like 12 mediocre tracks on an album, like, you can't send the album. But if you get four okay, kind of good Billy Idol tracks on one EP, then it's kind of good. I definitely dug the Roadside EP. I thought this new single was pretty good. I know the punk community goes back and forth on whether or not Billy Idol is cool or not. I think Billy Idol's real cool. And so I think he's doing all the right moves. You know, he's putting out, I guess, shorter, more compact releases here or there with all the fat trimmed off. And the songs aren't as good as Rebel Yell, but they're still pretty good. And Billy Idol still sounds pretty good. He still sounds like Billy Idol. Rami, are you on the camp that Billy Idol is cool as hell? Or are you in the camp that Billy Idol is punk plastic and is a total phony? Where do you stand? I remind the listeners that Billy Idol wasn't ready for the Sex Pistols. And he was in Chelsea as well.
When I'll remind the listeners that I'm old, so back in the day, Billy Idol was cool as hell. So my opinion has not changed.
Well said, well said. And more, is Billy Idol going to be a three in a row, or where's Billy Idol going to stand?
I don't mind Billy Idol. I like the majority of the stuff. I really liked the chorus, and I didn't like anything else. It just, everything else fell flat. But the chorus was good. And yeah, like that's the thing that's so cool is he still sounds like Billy Idol. Like he's not like, he hasn't dramatically changed. Like the singer from Red Hot Chili Peppers, you listen to him live. Anthony, he doesn't Anthony sound Kiss. Like, yeah, he sounds like a completely different person. It's nuts. but like Billy Idol still has it in that way. And it's good to see him like still doing stuff.
We're not comparing Anthony Kiedis to Billy Idol, are we? I'm gonna say that's three thumbs up for Billy Idol. Rami, thanks for coming on the show. Once again, the new album, The Visitor, is out September 9 via Fat Records. We're gonna close out with one last track, but before we do, Rami, you have anything else the listeners should check out, or anything you want them to take from the album, or any other words that you want to say before we wrap up the episode?
Thank you very much for having us on and the opportunity to give our backstory. And I guess just, we're talking about some videos. John has done all of our videos thus far. And so if the listeners have not seen our videos, please go check out those videos, because John is a multi-talented kind of guy. And it's not just his incredible drumming, but his talent on the video side is phenomenal as well. So.
Well, there you have it. Rami, thanks for coming on the show. And this is another track off the brand new album. This is We Used To, and we'll see you next week. Rami, thanks again.
Thanks.
We used to look ahead to times that we're now looking back on. All the moments started on the map. Southern California went back on her promise for the times to fly, but not with us intact. Intact.